Welcome to Disruptive Successor, a show for next generation leaders in family businesses and entrepreneurs who want to disrupt the status quo and take their existing business to a whole new level. We all know that what got us here isn't going to get us there. This show will provide inspiration, advice, and resources to help you create massive impact.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, The Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at thegoldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session. Hi, Jonathan Goldhill here. Welcome back to another episode of the Disruptive Successor Show. And today I have Tony Rose, who is the founding partner of Rose Snyder Jacobs. It's a CPA firm based in Encino, California. And Tony is a unique CPA. He has 40 years of experience working with entrepreneurs and families to minimize friction in their accounting and tax operations. But he's unique as a CPA because of his consultative approach to entrepreneurship and family businesses. He measures success in ergs of happiness and not money. He knows you need to go beyond numbers. And so Tony is also an author, and he's active in Vistage as a speaker and a leader in that community. Tony has written two books that I have read. One is called, one is Five Eyes on the Fence that I've not yet read, a personal book he wrote called Beautiful Grief. And what is the one with the elephant? Say hello to the elephant.
Say hello to the elephants.
All right, Tony, tell us first a little bit about your books and what they are about.
Great. And one correction, Jonathan.
Yeah.
I'm not a speaker at Vistage. I have been a Vistage member. I think it's a terrific organization. And I've done stuff in my groups in Vistage. And so I encourage anyone to join it if they have a mind to.
Yes. Well, everyone disregard what Tony just said. He could have been a speaker and he should have been a speaker.
I could have. You're absolutely correct.
All right. Tell us about your books. Like what is the sort of the elevator pitch summary of each of the books, and why are they important for entrepreneurs or family business owners or leaders in businesses to read books like yours or your books in particular?
Oh, thanks for asking, Jonathan. Number one, a lot of advisors do things, but maybe not so many get things done. And so I've spent my lifetime as a professional trying to figure out how to get things done for our clients and ways to conceptualize how to plan and how to actually execute. Planning is one thing, executing is another. So my first book, Say Hello to the Elephants, had to do with confronting uncomfortable truths in your lives, issues that you have, gaps that you have, and actually having a process to figuring out what to do it, and then establish whether what you did actually worked. So that's Say Hello to the Elephants.
And by the way, I have to interrupt and say, the reason why your book spoke to me at the time that I read it was I was building my consulting and then coaching practice. And those two words are probably my favorite two words in the coaching and practice that I have, which is planning and execution. And we take strategic planning and we parse that word into strategic thinking and execution planning. And you need, as an entrepreneur, to have a balance of both. So your book, I thought, was a wonderfully written, easy to read, and enjoyable, and spoke to me. And I would recommend to readers, learners, that they pick up a copy. So go ahead.
That's very nice. And I think there's a few left too. I am going to be rewriting it and updating it. Second book, Five Eyes on the Fence, had to do with the concept that you own something more than money, whether you're an individual, whether you're a family, or whether you're an entrepreneur, entrepreneurial business. You own actually four things, and if you manipulate those four things well, money comes out. Those four things are who you are as a person, what I call human capital, who you know, what I call social capital, what you know, what I call intellectual capital, and how you do things, what I call structural capital. And that was published by a textbook author. It's in a number of college libraries. So people have read chapters. I don't know how many people have read the book, but we're rewriting that, retitling it, Go Beyond Numbers. And we are going to be producing that in the fall of this year. And I think it's really good. I'm really, really happy with the way it's turned out. And we're just finishing up a little brochure, a 25-page, 30-page small book for Go Beyond Numbers for families of wealth.
So terrific. So let's just summarize that again. We had human capital.
Yes.
Social capital.
Yes.
We had structural capital.
Yes. And intellectual capital.
Intellectual capital.
Yes.
And was there a fifth one? So
money.
Financial capital.
That's correct.
Which is really the only thing that most CPAs ever really talk about is financial capital.
Yeah. So, yes, I do. I agree with you. It's a pity.
Right. So, Tony, why should people listen to someone like you about the four others?
They don't have to. If they're aware that there are four others, that's really fine. What I've done and what my unique ability is to make sense of things. Well, that's my why. I discuss in the new book, I talk about the concept of why.
Yeah.
And I've observed that when I'm giving advice to my clients, it has to be in the context of who those clients are, what they know, who they know, what their values are, their human capital, and the way they go about doing things. Oftentimes, businesses and entrepreneurs have a fatal flaw in that their structural capital isn't well thought out, because entrepreneurs just get things done. In fact, they decide before they think.
Okay, so I want to pause for a second. I want to ask and dig into this, but I want to give a plug for you as to why people should be listening to you about these other types of capital, because I know your firm to do excellent work. I know your partner, Jake Jacobs, going back to 1991, 1992, or 1993, we first met. I was very impressed with him back then. So I'm confident that your firm does a great job as a regional leader. And so if your firm is doing great work and you're listening to your accountant and he's talking to you about all these other things that don't have anything to do with your financial numbers, but they go beyond the numbers, then it seems to me that there's a lot of credibility there, like a lot of authenticity. You know, this man is talking to us about something that's very personal. So tell me, does that make sense to you?
Oh, absolutely. When you evaluate your professional relationships, Jonathan, and you know this, I know you know this, there's only one central question a client has. It's, do you care for me?
Right.
If a client believes you care for them, you actually can do a fairly shoddy job technically, and they will stick with you.
Right.
Which makes the discussion about dealing with advisors really important, because if you're hiring an advisor for strategy, do you care for me is really, really important. If you're hiring an advisor for tactics to get things done, being very tactical, if you're shoddy, that's probably not a good thing.
Right. But now you're talking to them about some other really nuanced subjects that people like you and I should be talking to our you know, because we're their trusted advisor and we should be able to talk to them about personal, professional, about their goals, about their lifestyle, about money and the meaning of money. It's so much just more than just the balance sheet, the income statement, and the cash flow. So tell me more about what this structural capital is all about and what it should mean, what it means to entrepreneurs.
This is my favorite subject. And when I give my talks to college classes, it is something they never really thought of. So I know that you may be at home today, but when you had a workplace to go to, did you go the same way almost every day? If there wasn't a traffic jam or an accident, did you use the same roads? Did you make the same right and left turns? The answer is, for you and your listeners, probably yes. Why is that? Because going that way got you there every time in about the same time.
Right.
So good structural capital is a way you do things, number one, that you can repeat, number two, that creates a positive outcome.
Mm-hmm.
One, two, three.
Right.
Now, let's say you've gone the same way every day, and you discover one day that there's a huge sinkhole about two-thirds of the way to your office and a huge traffic jam, and it takes you triple the time to get to the office. What do? That way doesn't work for you anymore. You find a different way. Structural capital goes for the proposition that you create structures in your business that creates reliable, repeatable, positive outcomes until they're not so good anymore.
Makes sense.
Now, really progressive businesses are constantly also looking for a better way, but they don't just haphazardly do different things. They keep filling their orders, taking care of their customer complaints, producing their product in the same way until they've vetted and it's to a different way. And I got to tell you a great story because it happened this week to us.
Okay.
We've had a Cisco telephone system for 15 years. And we knew that it wasn't going to be durable long term. And we started investigating other phone systems. And my IT partner and our IT manager was doing that. We got a notification 3 weeks ago that our telephone carrier was going bankrupt. And that as of this coming Monday, they no longer would be offering us any service at all. So we had all these units, 60 telephone units in our office, that were no longer going to be functional. Now, because we were looking for a different system, a different structure, we just ramped up that analysis. And within 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks, actually, we installed a new phone system. I'm pointing over here to our to this new telephone.
Mm-hmm.
Believe it or not, is Zoom.
Unbelievable.
So because we were planning for different structures and we had the structure in place to plan for different structures,
right,
we were able to ramp that up, convert. And as of Tuesday, we were on the new phone system, and it's not without its bumps, but it's working.
Yeah. So I think I understand the concept. I mean, when I was in business school many years ago, my professor talked about the corridor theory of entrepreneurship. And it was you're starting up a company, you're going into a particular, maybe you have a product or a market that you're looking for a product market fit. You go down one corridor, you think that, you know, this is going to be the big, you're heading towards the big room, and you open up a door and there's a much bigger room. And you think, this is a bigger room, this is a better room, this one's more worthy of my talents, of our team's talents. And so you suddenly pivot and go into that business. So the idea of pivoting through changes because you have a planning process in place and you are thinking analytically about your market, your product, the fit, it's easy to make that pivot because structurally you're wired to understand and look at the opportunity, but you see the opportunity presenting itself differently and you change.
Now, an interesting thing about this is let's talk about the interplay of intellectual capital.
Mm-hmm.
So let's say that you're a Broadway producer.
Yep.
And you're very successful. So now you may be looking for that bigger room, and mm-hmm. you perceive that bigger room to be a movie.
Right.
The problem is, you may think because you could produce a Broadway show that you can produce a movie.
Yes.
And unless you have the intellectual capital to produce a movie, even though that's a much bigger opportunity, you got to be careful. That gets into another concept in that's in our solution quadrant in quadrant planning, and which I call who.
Mm-hmm. The who. Right. Of course.
I know I've got something to offer. Hamilton the movie.
Yes.
Right. But I need a better who to produce that movie because I can produce the show. Someone has to have the technology and the structure and the intellectual capital to produce the movie.
Yeah, understood. So about 15 years ago, I helped a client transition out of his window film installation company. It was a small $2 million a year commercial installation company that went to large buildings, commercial buildings, large homes, and did window film installation to save on energy, et cetera. We cleaned up that company, prepared it to sell. He exited that company so that he could focus on his real passion, which was building a mountain bike manufacturing company. It was largely a marketing company because the bikes are manufactured in Taiwan, where, in Asia, where most bikes come from. And within a year of leaving the window film business, his mountain bike manufacturing company had already eclipsed the size of the business that he was running before. Of course, he had to get a whole new cast of characters because none of the people in the window film business could transfer over to the mountain bike manufacturing and marketing company. And so that company eclipsed it, went on to become an Inc. 500 fastest growing company. And wow. Partly the reason why he was able to do that so fast, in my opinion, was because the 20 years that he had worked building his other company taught him about how to build processes, how to hire the right people, how to make himself unnecessary, if you will, to the business in some ways. And so that requires both, I think, structural and intellectual capital, if I understand your terms correctly.
Yes, absolutely. There are two things that really occurs to me here that I want to point out to you in that story. Number one, you are a who for your clients and for the businesses that you serve and take care of, because that person would not have been able to do the transition in that film, the window film business, without having the right who, because they were probably incapable of doing that. So that's number
one. Right. Correct.
Number two, it's a demonstration of something I believe about intellectual capital, which is businesses where you have a passion and a structure and the right who's tend to thrive larger. It's hard for me to believe that your client had this passion for installing film on people's houses. I think it was a way for that person to make a living,
100%,
build a little business. And I'm sure he wanted the best for his customers.
Yep.
And he delivered value. But now the mountain bike, the first thing you said is that he had a passion.
Totally.
So when you're an entrepreneur, you seldom... There are many people that go into, I'm going to take, I'm, I'm, that there are many people that go into business that call themselves entrepreneurs, Jonathan.
Right.
That aren't entrepreneurs. And I'm not using this in a pejorative sense. They're opportunists.
Okay. Yeah.
So they see an industry, they see a gap, they see a need, they create a business, they know structure, they're organized, they can do it, but they don't have passion.
Right. They're like what we call speculators, basically.
They're right. They're there to make money.
Right.
There are people that create incredible businesses because for one reason or another, they have a passion. I found accounting easy.
Mm-hmm.
So I switched from a history major to an accounting major because I could make $50 a month or more when I graduated school. In those days, that's a lot of money.
Right.
Than being a history teacher. And I discovered along the way something that I had a passion for. My excuse, my method of delivering that passion was doing taxes, but it was really making an impact on people's lives. And I realized that making an impact in people's lives was to help them be happier. We get back to that ergs of happiness.
Yeah.
And how do you make it happy when you're a tax person? Is you make things easy and explainable and uncomplicated. That's when you're happy. Or most people are happy. Some people are happy with complication.
No, but I think keeping things simple is really important. That's something that we need to help our clients is to simplify. And that's something that leaders need to do in their businesses is to simplify, whether it's their strategy. Jack Welch said to be able to basically stay your strategy in like a simple phrase or a sentence. I think Michael Porter teaches the same things. But so simplification is really important that leaders and advisors must bring to the people that work in their companies. I think that's really important. But I think what's unique, Tony, maybe about you and about some other CPAs I know, is that they're not just historians, because history only tells you where you've been. It doesn't help you to predict or choose where you're going and what's going to be different next time, this next year. And so I think that's part of our job is to help them, make history by helping them find. Well, I mean, we can get into more esoteric talking about their passion, but at least helping them look at the numbers that they're trying to create and write their future instead of just always looking back. And so I think that's a unique role that we play as a consultant advisor to our clients. If we choose that.
Yeah. And I think there's many professionals, and they're good professionals, that do things. They do things, they get tax returns done, and they're happy to have them done. But do they get 50,000 feet above those activities and ask the question, does it really mean anything? What does it mean? And one of the things that we talk to our folks here about is understanding that the numbers that are on a piece of paper that we produce represents people's hopes, fears, aspirations, things that are significantly more important than the taxes they pay or the bank loans they get with the financial statements we produce. And they mean they are the embodiment of, to quote something from the play Rent, a year in the life.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the most important thing in the world. Someone goes into H&R Block with a W-2 to get their refund or their child credit or whatever. That person is doing a thing, producing it for $59 or whatever it is. But that W-2, that tax return is somebody's year, which is a series of moments in that person's life. And it means something to them, and it's important to them. So there's no unimportant client in our office.
Right.
Period.
Yes. But there are clients who have more complexity in their situations. And let's get into some of that. You deal with family businesses and non, and succession, legacy planning, taxes, government regulations. I mean, these are all things that are playing in owners' heads that, but maybe they don't ever get past the chapter titles of them, meaning like taxes would be one chapter, government regulation would be another, legacy planning, maybe another, succession planning, and they don't get into the details. And I think, first of all, like, how do we get owners to start thinking and talking about these issues beyond just tactics? How do we get them thinking strategically about planning, tax planning?
That's a very good question, Jonathan. I really believe only 15% of business owners really want to confront the complexities and the issues of things like legacy, succession, taxes, regulation they confront, whether they like it or not.
Mm-hmm.
I try to get clients that are reticent to confront their legacy planning by asking them the question, do they like to give to charity?
Mm-hmm.
Now, some people say, no, I don't care.
Right.
And I respond, but don't you understand when you pay taxes, you are giving to charity?
Right. Good point.
Because the difference is when you give to a specific charity, you're determining who and sometimes how that money is going to be spent.
Right.
When you pay your taxes, the government decides who and how that money is going to be spent.
Right.
So when you don't do planning, you're giving the power to the government to determine what to do with your money. Now, the current discussion, legislative discussion and tax reform discussion now, the paying fair share and increasing estate taxes and reducing the amount that people can give away in their lifetimes, which is what's being talked about right now.
Yeah.
Doesn't get into question the two central question, which is what percentage of what you earn is enough to give to the government? And the second is it okay for the government to take what you as an entrepreneur have worked for a lifetime to build? Because most entrepreneurs did not start rich. It took a long time to take it, to get it.
Right.
But in a moment, the government can take it.
Right.
And is that what we want our government to be doing? To take 40 or 50%, if you're in certain states,
sure,
of what someone spent a lifetime to build as if we were working for the governments? And that is the philosophical question. That's the philosophical question I ask my clients.
Well, I think the challenge for me in these conversations with my clients, because my client, although I'm oftentimes in communication with the founder or the predecessor, my client is typically the successor, and I call them the disruptive successor because they're typically a millennial, 25 to 40, who's taken over mom or dad's business. They're a next gen leader and they want a 2 to 10X their business. And so they have a mindset that they're willing to bet the farm. Whereas the dad, or typically he's like, I want, you know, conservative. I want to control. I want to own. And Tony, I think the resistance is people's unwillingness to look at their life as something that has a terminal value to it. That's a termination point. They're unwilling to talk about anything that gets near their death, or, you know, a what if scenario. And I think is what stops or holds back the conversation a lot of time. But because there's a lot that they could do from a planning perspective.
I think also, I think, first of all, you're 100% correct. For your client, the advice I would give is to tell that G1 owner of the business, because oftentimes they're the successors, but not the owners.
Right.
Uh-huh. Or they have a minority stake.
Right.
Is anything you want to do is okay as long as you and I have an agreement that we both understand what it means.
That's right. Which is a problem.
Number two is G1 almost never wants to give up control. Really.
Yes.
So they will say to your clients, go ahead and run the business. And that's a lie. It's run the operations, but don't run the business.
Yes.
Another thing that occurs to me is that there's not a definition for G1 about what's enough. So I have a client that's worth around $800 million. And the spouse in that group of people, in that family, will not do estate planning, will not transfer wealth intergenerationally. And that's okay. And that's okay. There's no sin in that. Mm-hmm. However, I believe it's because in that person's background, that person came from a very, very poor family, mm-hmm. where there was never enough.
Right.
And if you come from a place where there's never enough, then what you have now is never enough. And you have to understand that. And instead of being frustrated, it just becomes more expensive. You don't use the $20 million annual lifetime exemption that's available now. It's $21 million now. What it's costing the family is $8 million.
Wow. Can you clarify something? There's a $21 million lifetime exemption. Why did I think it was 11?
Well, it's 11.7, but for a couple. It's 11.7, but for a couple, it's actually 20. What is it? 20.23.4.
Gotcha. I guess I didn't get that memo for some reason. I missed out on that.
Yeah, it's double. It's double.
Unbelievable.
So I really believe that it's probably going to go down to a combined 7, maybe 10 next year.
Which is
there is a 5-month window, Jonathan,
right,
to get something done.
Right.
So don't ask your attorney how much it cost. Because your attorney, you try to get a discount from your attorney, you're going to go back in the back of the line.
Sure.
Pay your professionals the value they deliver.
Sure. And be aware. I mean, one of my other guests was an active member. I think you know Pat Saldano. I think that's how we maybe got connected.
I know, well before. I think it was through Jake, Jonathan. But I know Pat Saldano, and I am a member. I'm a contributor to her organization.
Yeah, and so her organization is involved in lobbying in Washington to make sure that family businesses are protected and saved and get beneficial tax treatment.
Yeah, Family Enterprise USA, very worthy of all your listeners' support. If they have a few bucks to give, go to that website, because I'm a big supporter of that. And Pat has given her lifetime to this group of families. And she does really good work. It's really an uphill battle, though.
Yeah, and I don't encourage my entrepreneur clients to get too involved in things that are really far outside of their control. And so there's a statewide organization. My first podcast was with a statewide lobbying organization for family businesses. And I think it's good to be kept apprised. It's a small membership fee to support them, but we can only really try and control the things that we can control. And given that there are certain regulations in place now, we can plan and we can try to use, you know, the charitable concept that you teach. I think is a good one, which is, look, you're going to be giving your money away. Why not give it to an organization of your choosing rather than the government, and you don't know how that money is going to be used. And I, for one, try to encourage that with my clients. One thing I do is I donate 5% annually my clients' coaching fees to an organization of their choosing. So I try and get them involved in stewardship early on by helping them to pick charities that they want to support that will in turn maybe benefit their visibility in the community, but also make them feel good. And they're not paying, that money is not coming directly out of their pocket. They've already paid me with that money. So I'm donating.
That's terrific, Jonathan.
I think I really liked it, and it really helps it helps my clients to align with my value system, and it helps me to choose the right client, help me to know who the right clients are. Because if they don't care about that at all, then maybe they're not my right client. So
you make me feel ashamed sometimes.
No, that's not the point. I learned it from my financial guy who was doing it. And I thought it was a great catalyst to trying to get that ideal client. So
there's a search guy in Las Vegas that does the same thing, who's affectionately known as the Godfather of Las Vegas. And he does the same thing. He gets an awful lot of ergs of happiness from doing that.
I bet he does. All right. So we talked a little bit about queue planning. If you want to talk a little more about what that is, and I want to also have you tell me the concept of strategic byproducts.
Okay. Thanks. And strategic byproducts is a consequence of queue planning. So queue planning is that quadrant planning model in Say Hello to the Elephants, which starts with getting clarity, follows by deciding on solution. The next step in that process is implementation. And the final step is what we call management or sustainability. So if you don't have all the information in front of you, it's very hard to create a solution that's going to be the most effective. But once you've decided on a solution, now you go ahead and do it. And while you're doing it, you need to kind of touch base with yourself and the people involved to make sure that things are getting done on schedule. There's no impediments, no new information, things that need to be modified. And then finally, once you get it done, you want to evaluate whether what you hoped was going to happen from getting it done actually happened. And then that in and of itself begins a whole new process of clarity around the next steps. Okay. So that's queue plan. That's laid out in my book. And you can have other methods to get things done. This happens to be our structural capital at Rose Snyder and Jacobs to get our engagements done. And we try to be conscious of that circular. It's actually an ascending spiral of that process. So right. in this office, we have something called Q1 meetings, where we try to get all the information we have and we talk to our clients. We have Q3 meetings once a week, where we communicate with our clients how the jobs are going.
Gotcha.
As a consequence of doing things, and in the sustainability quadrant 4, when you think about trying to get from here to there, things happen that you don't expect. So you might have a goal or an outcome you want to have, but because you're doing stuff, other great things happen that you don't expect. And we call that a strategic byproduct. So, you could be in that traffic jam on the way to because the pothole's there, and sitting next to a car with someone that you haven't seen for 20 years, and you roll down the window, you say hello, and you get together, and that person has a business opportunity for you.
Right.
That's a strategic byproduct.
Gotcha.
And you need to be aware that oftentimes those things that happen, which you think by mistake, are really byproducts of a sequential, systematic way of getting things done in your business. That's
it almost sounds like the concept of being in the flow, which is a concept that the Czechoslovakian author Mikhail, I'm going to botch his last name, Chizilinski. But the being in the flow is where, you know, I mean, literally when you're in a flow state, you're operating at your sort of genius level and things are just happening. And I think we all experience at times in our life when our lives and our business are just in a flow and everything is good. And when we're in a flow, you know, we might be hopping onto an airplane and we meet someone in the airport lobby that's just like the exact type of person we would want to meet or get connected with, or, you know, I mean, magic seems to just happen. And so it sounds to me like your cue planning process is this very structured process that allows for for people to get into that flow more easily, or know when they're in the flow because they're going through a structured process that feels right, that has good results. And then there are these byproducts that happen.
And it doesn't require you to have checklists for every box.
Okay, right.
In my office, we have kind of steps for every box because we're accountants and we need that.
Yes, of course.
It's really an awareness of the order in which things get done most effectively in any business, as much as having checklists. Mm-hmm. So you need to be aware before you make a decision to do something, you need to make sure you've had all the information. And how do you structure what information you need? We have strategies in the new book coming out, which is Go Beyond Numbers. There are strategies. I think there's 23 strategies in the book, all attached to one of the quadrants that really can attach to one of the quadrants. They attach to the different capitals, but they also, you can put them in the quadrant boxes. So it's and I think we're going to do that. That it's going to fit very neatly.
So you know, I think systems are really important, Tony. And you've created a really good company. You have systems that you follow, processes that are embedded within the systems that your accounting staff implement. I imagine it's pretty tough to teach this to your clients and get them. To get them to really understand what the system is. I know, and I share this because I've been part of a number of different coaching organizations. I was part of a group called Scaling Up, which is for mid-market companies. Vern Harnish created and founded it. It's an international organization. And then I've been pretty active in using the tools from Traction and the Entrepreneurial Operating System, popularly known as EOS. And what I'm sure you have that book, right? And so what
in fact, we're members of EOS.
Yeah. Okay. So what EOS has done, what Gino Wickman and his tribe of people have done really well is take the concepts from Scaling Up, make it simpler, teach them, evangelize, and tell people over and over and over, this is the system, this is the process, follow the system, follow this process. And that's something I've really admire. I was never able to quite do it in my consulting business because I would change my interest and my focus every 3 to 5 years. But they've made it so simple that it's really caught fire. And I know that sounds like you've created your own system with the cube planning.
Well, I need to make sure my office knows that I'm going to be just a little late to my next meeting.
And I've got a meeting that I got to run to also. So we're going to kind of.
I have known Gino for about 18 years. We don't tell this. I mean, when we describe how we get things done to a client, we talk about quadrant planning, but they never have to do anything.
I see. Okay. It's your
and
process.
If they want to know how we get things done and they want improvement in their structure, we might share with them what we've learned. But you know what? That's not our place at the table. That's your place.
Right.
We don't try to be all things to all men. We're people's accountants.
Right.
So we want to sit at the table with people like you and their other advisors and not supplant them, but make everybody better in a synergistic way to deliver services to their clients.
Right.
So
So your new planning process might be akin to what Vern Harnish calls, the words just escaped me, but it's your one word phrase or one word. It's your secret strategy, basically. It's your secret sauce that you have embedded into your business as a proprietary process that gets you results.
So it's available to people to use if they want it. They can read it in my book, but I don't sell that process.
Gotcha. Right. Exactly. All right. Well, look, this has been a wonderful 45 minutes with you. I would love to do another 45 minutes with you at another time. We both have to go. Our listeners have to go. Everyone's got lives to lead, businesses and meetings to run. Tony, your information will be in the show notes. How would you like people to get a hold of you? Is it through your books? Is it through email? Is it through LinkedIn? Well, all of the above.
They can type into Google or whatever, Go Beyond Numbers. I believe we have a website called gobeyondnumbers.com. Also, you could take a look at our firm at rsjcpa.com. That's rsjcpa.com. And you can see the podcasts that I've done and be looking on Amazon this fall for Go Beyond Numbers. Order it. Love it to be a bestseller. That'd be great. And you and I have a lot more to talk about.
Sounds good. I look forward to that.
Have a good week.
Everyone signing off. Thank you, Tony. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye, everybody.
This podcast is sponsored by myself, Jonathan Goldhill, and my company, the Goldhill Group, where we provide coaching for growing companies. I'm Jonathan Goldhill, and my purpose is simple: to guide entrepreneurial leaders in family businesses towards more freedom and fulfillment. I want entrepreneurs to get clarity around the changes that will make them and their businesses more successful so they can experience the same freedom I've enjoyed in my life. Our proven practices challenge business owners to think differently about their business and how they're running it, and quite literally become game changers in our clients' companies. Learn more at the goldhillgroup.com website, where you can schedule your free strategy session.
Thank you for joining us on the Disruptive Successor Podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe, review, and share with a friend who would benefit from the message. If you're interested in picking up a copy of my book, Disruptive Successor, go to disruptivesuccessor.com.